The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
The United States is moving, not inexorably, but still moving toward civil war, number one. And number two, civil wars are the very worst kind of wars, worse than any kind of war fought against a foreign adversary. So to number one, why is America moving toward civil war? For the same reason all countries that wind up in civil war get there, because the differences between their population, between people within their borders, becomes too great to bear.
Black people, brown people of all stripes, whether you're an Indian American or a Mexican American or whoever you are, go out in your place where you live and get a gun legally, get a license to carry legally. Because when you have people knocking on your door and taking you away without due process as a citizen, isn't that what the Second Amendment was written for? Go back and read what the Second Amendment says. And perhaps it will knock some sense in the head, in the heads of these people who are saying, well, it's all great. I don't believe they're doing it without due process. They're asking people for papers. They're not really beating people up. These people are doing things that are illegal. Nobody is illegal. It is a misdemeanor to cross the border.
And it's so ironic that John Bolton was out there front and center criticizing Donald Trump when the circumstances were so much different for Donald Trump, meaning so much worse for John Bolton, and he was doing this the whole time. And the other thing that I think is bad about it, the length of time that this was going on, it wasn't just like a one-off or something like that, or not that it would be excusable, but it would at least mitigate it. And then finally, this was all done to write a book. So he was ultimately going to profit or profited from retaining classified information and also probably from sharing it, getting feedback on his book, presumably. So all of this looks really, really bad for him. And it seems hard for him to say this is political. It would almost seem political not to charge this.
At this stage, really the only realistic hope for national unity is spiritual revival. Is a place where most Americans wake up to realize that God exists and created every single person in the United States of America. And
a Christian revival across the country. Bible sales increasing over 40% since 2022. Religion app downloads surging nearly 80%. That increase since 2019. And Christian music Spotify streams up 50% from 2019. Our next...
However, Donald Trump clearly understands Christendom and understands Christian doctrine and the power that Charlie Kirk brought to the advancement of the kingdom of Christ, because Erica Kirk showed me something remarkable at the White House right before coming over here to do your show, Jesse. If you don't mind, I'd like to share it with your audience. She opened up the Medal of Freedom, as you can see there, that very few Americans get. There have only been a few hundred given out, the highest civilian honor. And then she turned it around back. And what you can see here on the back is the first Christian cross, the first crucifix ever engraved onto a Medal of Freedom given by the president. This is a historic moment. It's the first time that religious iconography has ever made it onto this award. And it is done in honor of Charlie Kirk. And what Erica told me, Jesse, was that this is for the advancement of Charlie Kirk and his work for the kingdom of Christ. And the president understood that so profoundly that he gave him this great honor.
Well, to stay on the track, I had this stamped very indelibly in my mind. And I made up my mind I would receive only what God says. Now, I did look. I studied what the Methodist Church had. I studied what Baptists and others had against the Sabbath. I studied what Seventh-day Adventists had in favor of the Sabbath and what the Sardis Church of God Seventh-day had about the Sabbath. But I studied the Bible, and I threw out everything they had that was not according to the Bible. And I don't know anybody who got his religion right out of the Bible.
We safeguard the vulnerable from any type of exploitation. That is the character of a Muslim, or has a Muslim as a rahmah. This, remember, rahmah is in its place. It's in its place. When the Tel Aviv fans come to Birmingham in a few weeks, we will not show them rahmah in Birmingham. But it has its time and place. If you meet an IDF soldier and you charge him riba, there is no riba. You can take from him. Take, not give. You meet this IDF guy and you say, you know your team's gonna win. And you say, okay, if they win, you gotta give me $10,000. Your team wins, you take the $10,000 from him. Is it haram? The answer is no. If your team loses, you don't pay him. That is the ruling. That it applies to people like the IDF.
Mega montage to finish off this week's programs. Gone by so fast, as per usual. A lot to unpack as we go forward on today's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us today. You can email the show, td@thetrumpet.com. So there's an imam to finish the cold open. You know, mercy, showing mercy, extending mercy, it has its place. You know, you're going to show it for someone that maybe in a European to make sure they see that we're good Muslims. But certainly not to the Jews. You don't want to show mercy to the Jews. You want to take advantage of them. That's his theology. And you can be assured that that doesn't come out of the Bible. You heard Mr. Armstrong there, Herbert Armstrong in the cold open, talking about where he got his theology. I mean, he did prove all things when it came to the Sabbath. He saw what the Methodists said. He saw what the Seventh-day Adventists said. But when it came down to, you know, the final analysis, he relied solely on the Word of God, the sure Word, not just of Bible prophecy, the entire Bible, all Scripture is given by inspiration from God. And what does your Bible say about the world we live in? What does your Bible say about what's coming on our nation? You heard, I mean, you hear people openly, like I said yesterday, calling for violence. Go get some guns. I mean, look, it's just a misdemeanor. These people that are just flooding across the border, or that did during the Otto Penn years. Don Lemon, I mean, what about the misdemeanors on January 6th? The 4 hours that those individuals actually supported law enforcement. And all of those misdemeanors, actual U.S. citizens walking into the Capitol, where the doors were open, by the way, in some cases. And they were treated, I mean, we had pre-dawn raids that went on for years. It's unbelievable. Torturing people in the gulag of D.C. Torturing people into suicide in some cases. Hounding them. Bragging about how many arrests they had made. You'll hear Kash Patel here in a second talking about the FBI arrests in the past 9-10 months. And how that they're actually going after criminals. Actual criminals. Well, how refreshing is that? But then you've got Don Lemon and others like him saying, get a gun. We're at war. We're at war with ICE. Tucker's right. He's not always right. But we're headed toward civil war. We're headed toward armed conflict. I've mentioned Hosea 4 recently. Hear the word of the Eternal, you children of Israel, for the Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land, because there's no truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of God in the land. There's no mercy. Here's an imam, some religious guy in Birmingham, England, of all things. And they're celebrating. Islam in Birmingham is celebrating because the authorities in Britain are saying no Jews allowed at the upcoming game against Aston Villa. Maccabi, Tel Aviv, Yeah, there some Europa League, I think it is. There's a match on November 6th, and they're telling Jews to stay away. I mean, that tells you everything you need to know about the once mighty great empire that was Great Britain. And it also tells you everything you need to know about how they're intimidated. Law enforcement is intimidated by radical Islam. I mean, even Keir Starmer said that this was pathetic. This was a terrible decision. The Jews can't go to England. It reminds me of my son studied dance in Birmingham, England, and his teacher some years ago was planning a fesh in Israel. And sure enough, all the radical Islamists, they turn out in front of the dance school to protest. You can't go have a fesh in Israel. I mean, this was long before October 7. What has happened to Britain? What has happened to the city of Birmingham? The UK's just invited it in. And for the longest time, we were inviting it in as well. And God has a controversy with our nations. God says there's no truth. There's no mercy. Verse 2 says, by swearing and lying and killing and stealing and committing adultery, they break out and blood touches blood. Therefore shall the land mourn. You can see it. And here, right at the time of this controversy that God has with our nations, you've got so many people in the MAGA movement just celebrating peace in our time, eternal peace. Peace, peace, when there is no peace. Verse 6 says, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I will also reject you, that you shall be no priest to me. Seeing that you have forgotten the law of God, I will also forget your children. We better get back to the law of God. Now, there's no crucifix etched on a medal that's going to change any of these prophecies. We've got to get back to the law of God. We've got to get back to the Holy Bible. What does the Bible say? Verse 7, as they were increased, so they sinned against me. Therefore will I change their glory into shame. This is from Kash Patel. Again, some good news, I guess, when you look at it, you know, on the one hand. But on the other hand, it also highlights just how crime-infested our nation really and truly is. Clip 4.
The total number of arrests year-to-date this year by the FBI of violent offenders is 28,000. Just to put that in perspective, that's double the amount of violent offenders the Biden administration arrested in the same time period last year alone. And just to put something else in more perspective, the fentanyl that you cited in a three-month surge under Operation Summer Heat, 450 kilograms, is only a third of the fentanyl seized during the entirety of this year, some 1,900 kilograms, enough to kill 125 million Americans. Larry, that's an increase of 31% in fentanyl seizures year-to-date during the Donald Trump administration versus Joe Biden. And something we didn't get into yesterday in the Oval Office, the homicide rate in America is on track to be the lowest in the United States modern history by double digits. Mm. This FBI and our G men and women are getting back to being cops and going out on the streets and going after bad guys because President Trump gave us the authorities and resources we need to go after him. And another thing that needs highlighting, why are there so many violent felons in America? Because of 4 years of disastrous policies intentionally done so by the Biden administration to prioritize criminals and illegals over American citizens. Not anymore.
He says there, among those pretty positive statistics, but why are there so many violent felons in America? And now they're being encouraged. Yeah, go buy a gun. That's what the Second Amendment's for. It's for you illegals to shoot at law enforcement. That's Don Lemon. Used to be on CNN. Civil war is coming. And as Tucker said there, I mean, in a lot of ways, that's the worst of the wars. But then, like I said yesterday, when you commit suicide within, then you leave yourself exposed and vulnerable to the enemy forces assembling from without. Here, Britain's been overrun by radical Islam. And now authorities are saying, hey, if you're a Jew, don't go to that soccer game. A soccer game. Because you're going to be a target. And we just, the Jews are the problem. Not the hunted. Not the hunter that goes after Jews, that targets Jews. The Jews are the problem. Upside down world. What did Melanie Phillips put as her title many, many years ago? Londonistan. You could say the same thing for Birmingham. And then they're just inviting it in. All of this lawlessness. Lawlessness abounds. Truth cast to the ground. Iniquity. It's everywhere. Big news yesterday, of course, John Bolton. You saw some of that in the cold open. But here, he was as outspoken against Donald Trump and the classified documents. I mean, they raided Mar-a-Lago. And John Bolton was there cheering them on. Even as he was distributing classified material and documents around the world. I mean, he got hacked by Iran. He was sending them to his wife, his daughter, and all these people that didn't have security clearance. And even CNN is acknowledging that this case is pretty straightforward. He could finish his life in prison. This is a montage that we put together on the Bolton story from yesterday, clip 21.
John Bolton was just indicted by a grand jury in Maryland. Do you have a reaction to that?
I didn't know that. You tell me for the first time, but I think he's, you know, a bad person. I think he's a bad guy. Yeah, he's a bad guy. It's too bad, but it's the way it goes.
Case against him?
That's the way it goes, right? That's the way it goes. Will I what?
Have you reviewed the case against him?
No, I haven't. I haven't. But I just think he's a bad person.
These are serious charges. There is no question as someone who is in the intelligence community, you cannot send classified information.
Says Bolton began sending basically sections of his book to his publisher and literary agent through a non-governmental messaging app. So again, the external stuff that's supposed to be limited. And they what they say is bad is that the government concluded and told him that that manuscript already contained significant amounts of highly classified information.
He sent that over unclassified communication systems, Gmail. That's a fancy way of saying it. Sent it over Gmail. You'd obviously know you can't do that. And sent it to two people, albeit his wife and his daughter, but still people who are not cleared to get it. And that risk manifested itself because, in fact, there was a hack.
It's going to be hard for Mr. Bolton to argue that those transmissions were inadvertent or that he didn't know that he was mishandling classified or national defense information. So that alone elevates the seriousness of this case.
Yeah, I mean, these are pretty bad allegations. I mean, on the notion that, like, he was preparing to write a book, I mean, I just got to say, as an American, I find this so offensive that we put these people in these incredible positions of public trust, and they're there spending their time taking notes to write a book. It's pretty outrageous. And if the allegations in the indictment are accurate, that remains to be seen, of course. They're just sure. Allegations. It's not evidence. This is going to be a pretty tough sledding for Bolton.
But certainly this information is classified at the highest levels because this is information that get people killed. I mean, this is the type of information that if it gets out can reveal sources and methods that represent really threatening consequences for national security. But he had basically defied a lot of the objections from the intelligence community. And now this indictment says that he was sending this information to what appears to be his wife and daughter, who, of course, have no clearances, and that it might have even been hacked by the Iranian government or its associates. I mean, this indictment really shows a level of casual treatment of intelligence information that's quite shocking. He comes across like a teenager in a chat courtroom. I mean, he's sending this stuff by email after all the controversies that we have had for years about trying to secure this type of information.
Now that we've seen this indictment, how serious do these charges seem to you?
Well, Jake, if prosecutors can prove these charges, that's always the big if, then John Bolton's conduct to me is more serious, certainly than we saw in the investigations of Hillary Clinton, of Mike Pence, of Joe Biden, and even more serious than the conduct that got Donald Trump indicted.
It sets a bad example for the thousands of other people in the federal bureaucracy who have security clearances, because if the people at the top can be casual about it and then get away with it, that is not a good lesson to teach.
That's Bolton there at the end, a couple of years ago, talking about how bad of an example President Trump was setting with just being so careless with classified documents. That little quote there came right back to haunt Mr. Bolton for sure. It's you know, look at the media too. I mean, we saw the coverage after the ceasefire agreement, the hostages returning, and now with Bolton. I mean, it's almost like they've taken some truth serum. They're actually sounding like they're supporting some of Donald Trump's policies. And then you have all the articles coming out from conservative media just heaping praise on the Trump administration. And some of it's deserved. You go back to what my father wrote in Saving America from the radical left. I mean, we were so close to losing our republic. We were so close to being fundamentally transformed by the dear leader, Barack Hussein Obama, bowing down to enemy nations abroad, proudly. So close. And so the praise, even the radical leftist regime media, they looked at the ceasefire deal and the hostages returning and said, you know, that's you've got to give Trump some credit. Well, he's getting a lot of credit, but you look behind the scenes, you see what they did. I mean, we're learning more about the pressure that was put upon Bibi to sign this deal. He didn't like it, but he had to. That's what Kushner and Witkoff told him. You have to do this. You have no choice. Bibi, as it turns out, was the main obstacle to this piece of paper, the ceasefire agreement. On the day the hostages returned, Hamas took to the street and started shooting their political opponents. Still total control. This is from Neil Ferguson. Say what you will about Donald Trump, commanding comes naturally to him. Not only does he thrive on the job's relentless demands, he goes further. He has emerged this year as the disruptor in chief. His art of the deal approach, the outrageous opening bid, then the wheeling and dealing, has delivered transformational results at home and abroad in the space of 9 months. Lots of praise. And of course, a lot of Trump people are quite happy to congratulate themselves as well. There's a lot of vanity, a lot of arrogance. We're certainly not looking to God. We're not letting the Bible be the final say, the final authority. We talk about peace. We talk about a religious revival. And really, these are counterfeits to what has already happened in God's family. It takes the family. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. It's God's family that brings peace and unity. And it's God's church that has been revived. You go back about 20 years, 25 years. It was revived during the lawsuit years when we fought for Mystery of the Ages in court. God revived this church. And this is the truth. This book helps you understand the Bible. And Mr. Armstrong said, read it along with your Bible and let the Bible be the final say. This book shows you how world peace is coming. Satan has his counterfeits all over the place. Miranda Devine, Trump derangement syndrome is on the way out. The president's alpha male greatness shines after peace deal. I mean, it's amazing just how short-sighted some of these sharp commentators are. Neil Ferguson's a historian. I'll read another article from him in a second. Surely he knows that throughout man's history, where there's just been war and rumors of wars, that one peace agreement after another has just collapsed. It's fallen apart. Look at how the world celebrated Chamberlain in the lead up to World War II. They were celebrating peace. Peace in our time. And what was it? A month later, there's war? World War, the worst war in human history? 2 years ago, on the last great day, that great day of the feast, you had this massacre of Jews. And 2 years on, you've got this peace deal. The day before, the last great day, the hostages are released. Donald Trump should have gotten the Nobel Peace Prize. And oh, by the way, there's also a story about Jews staying out of Birmingham next month. It's too dangerous. In the UK, in Great Britain, is this eternal peace that we're looking at here, or are we headed toward war, civil war, world war? Well, we've got to let the Bible serve as our guide, the sure word of Bible prophecy. It's easy to get swept up into the hoopla, the celebrating, a false sense of security, just like my father wrote with respect to Jeroboam, the Jeroboam of old, and we're seeing it set in again today. The unique personality could only have come from New York, says Devine, the greatest city in the greatest country on earth, the Rome of our time. Is New York really the greatest city in the world? They're about to vote for Mamdani. They're about to have an Islamic mayor. Is that really greatness? Is that how you would define greatness? I mean, here he is calling out Cuomo, saying you haven't even visited a mosque yet, as if that's the way you're supposed to carry an election campaign. I've got to go visit all the mosques. So says Mamdani. Our countries have been transformed. The U.S. didn't get the complete fundamental transformation that the dear leader had hoped for. But we've certainly been transformed by a lot of transgression. And so has Britain. And God says, I've got a controversy with these nations. Donald Trump's innate cool you find in real New Yorkers, a nonchalance that masks enthusiasm. His restrained signature dance says it all. He's the human embodiment of the American flag, the navy blue suit, the red tie, the white shirt, and the golden hair. I mean, everything's on the up and up. When Donald Trump signed that peace agreement last week in Egypt, he did it in front of a banner that said Peace 2025, like it was some sort of business deal. The art of the deal, as Neil Ferguson says. Peace 2025, eternal peace. Your Bible says man doesn't know the way to peace. Sorry. It says it in Romans 3. It says it in Isaiah 59. It says it in 1 Thessalonians 5. It says it in the book of Jeremiah. Man just doesn't know. I mean, the passion that the ambassadors for peace have for making an agreement, verbally or otherwise, forcing Bibi Netanyahu, the one with the rising lion spirit, to comply. You've got to. You've got no choice. Neil Ferguson has a piece at the Free Press, How Real Estateism Got the Deal Done in Gaza. Real Estateism, coming from Trump, coming from Witkoff. They're deal makers. Ferguson says everyone should be glad that the hostages have been freed and hope that this peace process succeeds, acknowledged the editor of the New Republic. And he quotes from The Guardian, all these left-wing outlets that are praising Trump. I mean, this is an administration with king-like power and authority. We're in the age of Jeroboam. And Ferguson himself, he's been skeptical in the past about Trump and Trump's policies and his pursuit of peace. And he admits here, this is a success. But notice also what he highlights in this article. Netanyahu did not like the plan. He did not like withdrawing from Gaza. He did not like releasing 250 Palestinians serving life sentences. He did not like amnesty for Hamas members. He especially did not like point 19, which reads, while Gaza redevelopment advances and when the PA reform program is faithfully carried out, the conditions may finally be in place for a credible pathway to Palestinian self-determination and statehood. What? A Palestinian state? They had it in Gaza, remember? They still have it in Gaza. And the Hamas charter says, we're here to kill Jews. So if you're a Jew, you don't go to Gaza. And also Birmingham, but we'll get to that later. You stay out of the no-go zones. And then we'll work to give Hamas and their brothers an even bigger state, right alongside the Jewish state. How do you think that's going to go? But this was where Trump's relationship with Netanyahu and his record in the region allowed him to succeed where Biden could not. You're doing it, Trump told the Israeli prime minister. After an 11-hour meeting, Kushner and Witkoff told Netanyahu, you don't have a choice. You're coming to the White House on Monday. You'd be hard-pressed to find stronger negotiating language aimed at Hamas. You don't have a choice? You're going to do this? I mean, we're bullying Israel. That's what it amounts to. We're betraying Israel, as we wrote earlier this year in the Trumpet. We've betrayed our brothers. Netanyahu couldn't go in and finish the job. Not even after Israel's 9/11. Not even after October 7, the massacre. The blood touching blood, raping, murdering, killing, taking hostages, looting. It was there on September 29 that Netanyahu made the call to his Qatari counterpart, Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman, murmuring an apology through gritted teeth for the airstrike on Doha. You got to apologize too to Qatar because they're our new best friends. We love Qatar. And we know they give safe passage and harbor to Hamas, the leadership. But that's okay, because they're wearing suits. I mean, they look nice. They've trimmed their beards. They're good negotiators. They just want a deal. We've got real estateism to bring them to the negotiating table. Peace in our time. Ferguson says point 9 of the agreement seems especially far-fetched, with its temporary transitional governance of Gaza by a technocratic, apolitical Palestinian committee. These are direct quotes from the agreement. A technocratic committee? Did Trump's people actually write this? Under the supervision of a new board of peace, supposedly chaired by Trump and with Tony Blair as a member, the board of peace to the rescue. Equally hard to imagine is a successful revitalization of the Palestinian Authority, but it is doubtful that Kushner and Witkoff worry too much about those castles in the air. Their main goal was to just get it done. You just have to get a deal. The hostages out, the war stopped, and they succeeded. They succeeded. And Ferguson acknowledges, I've got to give him credit. They successfully pulled off a peace deal. And now we have peace. Now the hostages have returned. And, oh, by the way, 250 terrorists have gone over to Hamas. But we'll not tell that side of the story. We'll just talk about the success, the pressure, the fact that Bibi was forced to make this deal. And the dirty little secret is there's quite a few conservatives. They're happy to hear that. They're happy to hear that Bibi had to do this. Because the Jews, you see, the Jews are the problem. The problem is with the people who are being hunted. Not the hunters, not the killers, not the assassins, not the criminals. The ones being hunted. How short-sighted. I mean, so many of these commentators, historians even, talking heads, they just zoom in on the announcement, the handshake, the signature ceremony, and then we talk about peace in our time, eternal peace. What must God think? What do you think? What is God's opinion of all these things that we're seeing transpire? In the Jerusalem Post, it says, Donald Trump stated that if Hamas continues to kill people in Gaza, this is from this week, after all of these successes, if he continues to kill people in Gaza or they, Hamas, which was not the deal, we will have no choice but to go in and kill them. He said that on Truth Social. JNS. Trump deserves enormous credit for pushing through a deal that freed all 20 of the living hostages who were kidnapped during the Hamas-led Palestinian Arab assault on Israeli communities October 7. As part of the deal, the Jewish state was forced to release 2,000 Palestinian security prisoners, including many with blood on their hands, serving life sentences for murdering Israeli citizens. We let murderers out of prison. But that's okay. We did a deal. We made peace. In what universe does releasing murderers make peace? This is where we are. The pursuit of peace. This is not of God. This is not how the Bible explains the pursuit of peace. Not at all. Not even close. Let the murderers out. Give them the state that they want. Keep the Jews out of the state and Birmingham. And everything will be fine. Then we'll have peace. Peace in our time. The essential provisions of the deal outside of freeing hostages were that Hamas would disarm and relinquish power in Gaza. That was part of the deal. Only if that were accomplished could the threat of a revived Hamas-run Palestinian terror state in Gaza be removed, and along with it, the guarantee that the Islamists could not make good on their promises to repeat the atrocities of October 7 over and over again. But the genius of the plan is also its weakness. This is at JNS. Their most recent success also hinged on their willingness, speaking of the Trump administration, their most recent success also hinged on their willingness to liberally interpret Hamas's response to Trump's terms for ending the Gaza war. I mean, we've got to give Hamas some latitude. We've got to sort of approach this, you know, liberally interpret the rule. Now, with Bibi, you tell him he has no choice. Tell him he has no choice. He's got to submit. I mean, we are looking at the rules for Bibi. They are ironclad, and there is no room for any kind of latitude or movement. You just submit. I mean, this is, if we didn't know the Holy Scriptures, these are some terrifying realities here. Trying to appease Jew-hating murderers. So much so that we let him out of prison. And then we carry on. Even as we announce that no Jews are allowed in Birmingham, England, we carry on and think that I think we've finally reached the terms of a peace deal. I think they're going to love us. Melanie Phillips says, President Trump himself said repeatedly that the war had ended. Then he noticed that, true to form, Hamas was reneging on aspects of his own 20-point ceasefire deal. Uh-oh. In particular, it has failed to return all the bodies of the hostages. Okay. Melanie says how this will play out is currently unclear. Trump says if they don't disarm, so they didn't release all the dead bodies, they haven't disarmed. Trump's issued threats. This is all this week. Even as we're celebrating peace in our time, even as we're celebrating all of the successes in the Trump administration, far from feeling defeated, Hamas knows that it has been handed a powerful card for its continual survival, the Trump administration's infatuation with Qatar. Yeah, so much so that Bibi had to call him up and apologize. I'm sorry for bombing terrorists that have been trying to kill Jews. That was my bad. We'll lay down our arms. We'll disarm. Even if Hamas doesn't. We've got to. I've got no choice. It says here, Qatar is hated by the other Gulf states because as a Muslim Brotherhood jihadi regime, it's the fount of Islamist extremism that threatens these states' own security. It's also the sponsor, funder, and protector of Hamas. Qatar. It's the sponsor, it's the funder, and it's the protector of Hamas. So not surprisingly, Saudi Arabia is alarmed that Qatar will restore Hamas to Gaza and undermine attempts to de-radicalize the population of the coastal enclave, which is a central pillar of this peace plan. The peace plan is not looking so peaceful, and we're just a few days in. The so-called protests calling for a ceasefire and aid to the Gazans aren't ending just because there's a ceasefire and aid is flooding into the strip. Perish the thought, she says. The protest organizers say the ceasefire is very nice but irrelevant. Their aim remains, as it always was, the destruction of Israel. It's like I said yesterday, they don't care about Nigeria. They don't care about genocides going on in China or Nigeria or anywhere. It's just, if it's just Jew, if we could just get rid of the Jew problem. Listen, don't beef up security and go after a radical Islamist that openly says, I'm not going to show any mercy to a Jew. I mean, that's coming from the top. That's coming from the theology major in the Islamist movement. I mean, he's getting his truth right out of the Holy Scriptures, is he not? Show mercy to any other group except Jews. Take advantage of them, persecute them, murder them if you have to. And so the hate marches have continued. They continue just because there's a ceasefire and the hostages are back and the humanitarian aid is now flowing into Gaza. We still got to protest the Jews. We still have to make sure Jews don't show up in Birmingham, England, where there's lots of Muslims. It's a no-go zone. If you want to see your team play Aston Villa. What a shame. It's embarrassing. This from the world's greatest ever empire. Because God poured blessings from heaven upon that empire. And what a different empire it is today. It's not even an empire, is it? Far from it. It's little England. One British pro-Palestinian student group said it would work, or that its work was not over until Zionism is completely eradicated. One British pro-Palestinian student group. A group! Our protesting continues. We'll continue taking to the streets until Zionism is completely eradicated. What does that mean? So on the one hand, we're putting together a 20-point plan that says, hey, once this is established and set, then we'll go ahead and give them a state. And meanwhile, you've got people calling for the elimination of the Israeli state in Britain, in America. The unprecedented campaign against Israel and the Jews was always about far more than Israel's behavior in Gaza. The Islamist-led demonstrations that started on October 7, 2023, while Israelis were still being butchered and kidnapped, and weeks before, the IDF forces went full force into the Gaza Strip to battle Hamas. They weren't protests at all. They were a call to arms. That's right. Give the criminals, the murderers, give them weapons. That's really what that imam was saying in the cold open. Don't show mercy to Jews. You show no mercy to Jews. And then for his part, there's Don Lemon saying, hey, the illegals, the lawbreakers, go get guns. And let's have a shootout. Peace, peace. When there is no peace. At I-24 News, a decision to ban Israeli soccer fans from attending a match at Birmingham announced on Thursday after police advised the Aston Villa club no away fans could be at the game due to security concerns. You got to keep the Jews from coming to see the Tel Aviv team. You see? See how it works in Britain? The decision to ban Maccabi Tel Aviv fans from attending the match against Aston Villa was a national disgrace, said British opposition conservative leader. Part of the backdrop of the decision were the events in Amsterdam in November of last year, where more than 150 people were arrested after what was initially reported as clashes following a match between Maccabi and Ajax. It later emerged that the violence was organized in advance by bands of mostly Arab and Muslim youth. That was in Amsterdam, the Netherlands. And now in the UK, you see it's spreading. It's okay. I mean, initially, the report was, well, it's just a couple of soccer teams clashing. No. It was persecution of Jews. It was Jew hatred. Blood touches blood. Don't try to stop the Jew hunters. No. Just stop the Jews. And problem solved, right? Then we'll have peace. This is a tweet from an MP. I welcome the news that Maccabi Tel Aviv fans will not be permitted to watch the match at Aston Villa. I welcome this. This is good news. His name? Ayub Khan. You guessed it. Oh, yes. He's a radical Islamist, no doubt. And also a distinguished government official. I welcome this news. I couldn't be happier that no Jews can go to this soccer match. This really pleases me. Richard Palmer at the Morning Brief. Fans of Maccabi Tel Aviv will be banned from watching their team play. He says local politicians openly celebrated that their mobs had successfully excluded Jews from a major sporting event. He gives some of the high praise that locals, members of parliament, the radical Islamist sympathizers, Britain has imported thousands of anti-Semites through mass Muslim migration. They're in the government, and even the police are intimidated by their threats of violence. That's in the Morning Brief. But don't worry, what we're seeing is a revival of religion and peace in our time. Listen to Jesse Waters the other night. This was after President Trump gave the Presidential Medal of Freedom to the Kirk family, clip 7.
Trump awarded Charlie America's highest civilian honor, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. The medal was originally established by President Truman in 1945.
He was assassinated in the prime of his life for boldly speaking the truth.
for living his faith and relentlessly fighting for a better and stronger America. He loved this country. And that's why this afternoon it's my privilege to posthumously award Charles James Kirk our nation's highest civilian honor, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Thank you.
His widow, Erica, accepted the medal and said Charlie couldn't have gotten a better birthday gift.
Skip ahead now. I'll just see how much more I can squeeze in. This is clip 9.
And peace on earth is not out of reach. Charlie, in a way, was a prophet and saw Donald Trump would be the right leader to restore this great American republic and spread love throughout the Holy Land. The Jews and Arabs can't agree on anything, but they both agreed that they trusted Donald Trump.
I think today what I've been mostly struck by is Donald Trump's sheer force of personality. There are not many men, not many leaders who can walk into the Knesset in Israel to such rapturous applause, such a warm welcome, and then, less than an hour later, appear in a room of world leaders, Arab and Muslim leaders, and have the same kind of warm welcome. It really is his force of nature which has managed to make this happen.
The force of personality. Look at what's happening. What did Jesse say there? Peace on earth is not out of reach. Is this what peace on earth looks like? Israel leaves and Hamas starts gunning down, executing people in the streets of Gaza. Is this what peace looks like in Birmingham, England? A friendly soccer match that I guess is not so friendly. No Jews allowed. No Jews allowed in Gaza. What do you think would happen if 100,000 Jews moved to Gaza City? They can't do it. But listen, give them latitude, Hamas. Make sure you have a liberal interpretation of the rules for Hamas. And then you just tell Bibi, you got no choice. You've got to submit to this. Or else you lose our support. This is not peace in our time. I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news. It's not. Peace on earth is not out of reach. Charlie was a prophet. They trust Donald Trump. I think Hamas also knows that Donald Trump doesn't always follow through on some of his threats. I mean, like Sam was saying, you could take this as an opportunity to go into Gaza again and to try to kill the ones that you just, the murderers that you just let out of prison. But that's probably not going to happen because we've got to appease the enemy. If the enemy says, listen, we do not want Jews and we're not going to show mercy to Jews, then Western leaders are typically fine with, okay, well, that's okay. We'll put some pressure on the Jews just to make you happy. When will the next October 7 happen? And what will the ambassadors for peace say then? What will it be like a year from now? Well, even 5 months from now. When is the next attack coming on Jews, on Christians, on whoever? Jesus said wars and rumors of wars. You can see why he also said, lift up your eyes and look to the God in heaven above. Look to the God family, the true peacemakers, government and peace. That's Isaiah chapter 9. I mentioned it earlier this week. Let's just finish there quickly. Isaiah chapter 9, government and peace. It says peace second to government because it takes the government of God, not any man. It takes the government of God to bring peace. Verse 6 of Isaiah 9, for unto us a child is born. That's speaking of Jesus. Unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. He's the Prince of Peace. Jesus Christ is the peacemaker. And look at what he has to do when he returns, just to put down rebellion. That's what it takes to bring peace to this war-torn planet. Verse 7 says, of the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom to order it and to establish it with judgment and with justice from henceforth, even forever. It says the zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this. God will perform it. God will bring peace. Jesus Christ's administration on this earth will bring eternal peace. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily, and I took you a minute over. I'm not going to charge you for that. It just moves by so fast, this fastest hour in broadcasting. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you next time.